Welcome to the Israel Answers series, connecting Israel, the Bible, and you. Join Susan Michael as she explores timely issues and current events from a scriptural perspective to equip the Christian world with a balanced and biblical response. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes, which will ignite your faith and bring the Bible to life in your everyday world. Now, let's join Susan with your Israel Answers.
So we are here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and I have run into a good friend, and I'm so happy to be able to introduce to you Hananiah Naftali. And he is from the Prime Minister's office in Jerusalem. And he was a speaker for us last year at a gala dinner that we did. And so just really so happy to have you here, Hananiah.
Thank you for having me.
So you are known as a Jewish influencer. Your work for the Prime Minister is in the digital department, so you're working on social media, and you've built quite a following for yourself on social media. So
Praise God. We're
very honored to have such a personality here with us today. So tell us how that came about. How'd you get started in this?
Wow. So I served in the Israel Defense Forces. In Israel, everybody has to when they turn 18. And I was recruited into the Armored Corps. In 2014, I participated in the Gaza War. And unfortunately, we have too many of them. It's hard to keep up with it. But in one of these wars, I fought in Gaza. I fought Hamas. And it really, when we fought there, I saw what we were doing. We were given strict commands. You are not to target civilians. You are not to target Palestinians. Your enemy is not the Palestinian people, but Hamas, terrorists. That is actually the enemy of Palestinian people for being there. So when I came back from the Gaza Strip, I saw the protests against Israel. It's crazy. I came back from the Gaza Strip, I opened my phone, I called my parents to calm them down, and I was actually very encouraged. My mother told me that they are praying for me. They know that the angels of God are surrounding me. So it really gave me like a very strong power nap that we all needed. And after that, I opened my phone, I see anti-Israel protests, burning the flag of Israel, hating on Israel. And I was not okay with that because I knew what we did in the Gaza Strip. And they were saying that we are war criminals. So I decided to change that. And yeah, I decided to, I was born and raised in Israel. So I decided to work on my English, sharpen my English, and learn how to edit videos, learn how to use social media to utilize this double-edged sword in order to tell the truth about my country. And I wanted people to know what's happening in Israel because I realized that many people are influenced by mainstream bias, and I can't blame them because many of them never met an Israeli, never heard from an Israeli person who is on the ground. So I was very happy to be able to do this and to advocate for Israel. That's what I do today. I have altogether about 3 million people following what I'm doing. And yeah, on top of that, I work for the Prime Minister. I help him with the social media. I've been doing that for the past 6 years, advising him on that.
So how did that come about?
So in Israel, we have a term called chutzpah. It means that if you see a door that's closed, you don't knock on this, you break it. So I had about 300,000 followers on social media, and I wanted to interview the Prime Minister. I wanted his opinion on how best can people defend Israel. Because he was the ambassador of Israel to the UN back in the 80s. So I reached out to one of his advisors on Facebook. I said, hey, I want to interview the Prime Minister. They got back to me. They said, actually, funny you mentioned this because we were just considering offering you to make this happen. So it's funny how my chutzpah made it. It was great coincidence.
But they had seen you on social media. They saw what you were doing.
Right, because the videos that I was making got millions of, yes. of views, and it was really by the grace of God, because I didn't know what I was doing. I was just, I had this passion. I wanted people to know what's happening. So I did an interview with the Prime Minister, and it was back in 2017. And again, funny how things work in Israel. I was told you have 20 minutes to interview the Prime Minister. So I arrived with my equipment. I don't have a team like your amazing team here. So I had to carry everything on my with me. I carried this to the Prime Minister's office. Security guards were a bit interested why I'm carrying so many, you know, tripods. So I enter his office. They tell me, we're very sorry. You have 2 minutes. So I said, okay, let's get what we can from this. So we enter, and I spoke with the Prime Minister. We did the interview. He was very excited to speak about it. Defending Israel is something that's very important to the Prime Minister. So he told me something very interesting, because I asked him, how can we best defend Israel? And he said, the Prime Minister told me, look, we don't need to lie. Just tell the truth. Just take the truth, deliver it to the people. We don't have to think how to distort facts, how to lie to people. You just need to tell the truth.
That's true.
He said, how long we've been here? Only 4,000 years? So that's how it started to work for him.
That's a great story. And what a privilege to be a part of his team. And because he does understand the need to defend Israel, the battle for truth, as he called it. And to have you on that team is really a privilege.
Absolutely. And I think it's so important to be able to tell the truth. And I also call on people that watch this to don't be indifferent. We live in an era where truth is such a rare ingredient. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, more rare than gold and diamonds. So if you have the truth, speak it out. Don't be shy. Leave shyness back at home. I used to be shy. I used to be an introvert. But when so much is at stake, the future of the Jewish people and the future of truth, because we see how the cloud of darkness is crippling into almost everywhere we go. So if you have the truth, speak it.
So, Hanania, what kind of impact have you seen from what you're putting out there on social media? I mean, I've seen some of your videos are great, and you're just getting the facts out there. But you do it in a really clear, concise way. It's visually and everything. So do you have any stories to tell us or examples of how that it's actually made an impact? Maybe it changed somebody's perspective or...
So it's very interesting that my audience is not mainly Christian or Jewish. I have everything of everything. So I have people that love to watch the truth about Israel who are atheists, who are Christians, Jews, Muslims, people who don't know who they are yet. So I think that it's very, very broad audience. And I got an interesting message from a person in Lebanon. He messaged me, I think it was last year. He watched all of my videos and he told me, look, I opened the windows from my house. I see flags of Hezbollah. He said he lives in southern Lebanon. He sees flags of Hezbollah, but he says, my heart is with you. And he said, inshallah, one day we shall meet for hummus in Lebanon. So I responded to him. I said, well, inshallah, we meet in Tel Aviv, because in Tel Aviv we have better hummus. So it's a funny joke in the Middle East that every person in the Middle East thinks that they know the best hummus place. But the important fact is that peace is being made regardless of what you see. Under the surface, people are seeking peace. At the end of the day, we Israelis are not interested in having wars all the time. I would much rather be at home with my family than to be deployed in the Gaza Strip. I didn't want this war. Nobody wanted this war except for Hamas.
Now, you did just serve in the Gaza Strip, correct? How long were you there?
So on October 7, when Hamas decided to declare war on Israel and massacred people. It was the day that most Jews were massacred since the Holocaust. Everybody were deployed. We had 150% rate of percent of deployment. So more people than needed came to military bases. And I am in the Armored Corps, so I was deployed as well. And it's just crazy. There was chaos. People didn't know what's going on. And I said goodbye to my wife, not knowing when I will see her, which is crazy. So I left, and I was also deployed. I was inside the Gaza Strip for about 2 weeks, but so we had an operation there. I'm also a combat medic, so my role would be to either save people, give them medical aid, or just pull them out of the Gaza Strip in time of war. So that's what we did. And everybody in Israel knows someone that fell, somebody that they knew, that they lost them.
Yeah.
And it was really crazy. Funeral after funeral, Shiva after Shiva. You see so many, I imagine in my head the land of Israel was a land of blood. So much bloodshed, so much tears, and people that lost their loved ones. So it's really heartbreaking. But again, we have to remember that God is a God of justice as much as he's a God of love. He's a God of war also. And you know, in war you have to defeat the evil. And it's a war between good and evil, light and darkness.
Well, Hanania, you're a young man, a young Israeli. And how do you see that this war and the mourning, the grieving, the impact of this has affected those in your generation in Israel?
People like to say that my generation and below, they are a generation of TikTok.
Yes.
A generation of quick videos. A good for nothing generation, if you may. And they were proven wrong, that this is a brave generation, a generation that never lost their identity to TikTok videos, a generation that seeks meaning, and a generation that is willing to make the ultimate sacrifice for the cause of Israel. And we have many, many people in Israel that are now suffering trauma, people that the war hit them really bad, not just physically, but mentally. And I know that there are many, many therapy services that offer free services to Israelis who cope with PTSD and with post-war trauma. And what helps me, however, as someone who was in the battlefield, is to think about, to zoom out, to think that this is not just me fighting Hamas. It's greater than that and deeper than that. It's fighting evil. It's fighting satanic movement.
So how do you explain this with your generation? Because I've heard a lot of people talking about this, that they had kind of written off the young people, that they're the TikTok soldiers and the chocolate bar soldiers, that they're spoiled, that they weren't going to know how to fight. And I heard that there were some generals that actually did like a press conference or a statement or something and said, we apologize, because they've been proven so wrong, because your generation and the younger ones have proven themselves to be really good fighters. And they've gone to war and they're doing an excellent job. So how do you explain that? What is it? They're saying that this younger generation is fighting better than the older generations did when they went to war. How do you explain that? What is it that's driving them?
I read in, I heard in a lecture from a psychologist in Israel years before this war that they were studying this generation today. And he said that in their studies, this generation is scared not of death, but scared of living life that has no meaning. We saw very well how true that was. A generation that is not scared of death, but is scared of living meaningless lives. So I don't know what what can possibly explain that. But I think that in Israel, in a different way than other countries, you grow into a society that you know that your time will come to serve your country. So I grew up with this mentality that my time will come and I will be given the privilege. It's not a duty, it's a privilege to serve Israel.
Wow.
And I think that when you're living in a society like this, it changes your mindset. I'm hearing many Americans that tell me that they wish that there was some compulsory service in America to some extent. I think that it helps shape the future generation.
I'm sure it does. It's very transformative in a young person's life to do required military service like you do there in Israel. There's a lot of things that you're trained in, the discipline, I mean, everything, you know. I think you're right. We probably would greatly benefit from that. Now, I heard that while you were serving in Gaza, that the Prime Minister's office called you back and they needed your help. Tell me, in social media, so you've been doing it for 10 years now or longer?
And more or less.
So over the 10 years, I'm sure you've done a lot of this and a lot of that, but what's your current strategy? What's the new thing, the new direction you may be taking in your social media outreach for Israel?
Well, we can't reveal all the secrets here because it's being recorded, but I'm joking. I think that people need authenticity and genuinity.
I agree.
They in a world of cameras, people forget that it's very easy to spot if you're truthful with your facial expressions. People are not stupid. They know when you're speaking the truth or when you're speaking out of some hidden interest, concealed interests. And I think that people notice that. So when you're authentic, when you don't embrace the mistakes, at first I was not sure if I want to do videos about Israel in English, because I said, maybe people will notice that I'm Israeli with my accent because it's not American. But I said, let's embrace that. It's authentic. I don't care if I make mistakes. I don't care if he's better than me. I'll be myself. And I think that's the best strategy for social media, to be yourself and to be consistent. That has proven to be very, very key to success on social media.
Well, it must be working, because if you have 3 million followers, that is really astounding. And, you know, you mentioned the faces that you could tell by looking in a person's face. I'm going to go back to our previous conversation, but I noticed when I looked at the pictures of all of the, a lot of the hostages or the soldiers that have been killed on the battlefield, and you get these pictures and you look in their faces and it's just like they are just beautiful people, just good, beautiful people. You can see it in their eyes and their smiles. And a lot of those killed, even the young people that were at that festival and everything, just beautiful people. And I've been thinking about this a lot, that I think the young people in Israel, and hats off to the older generations that raise such good young people that with good hearts, and they saw this massacre and they're just out of the goodness of their heart, I think, going after the enemy. And it's something very good and positive and pure that's driving them.
Like you said, big time kudos to the older generation that knew how to discipline their children, because also there are many stories of older people that took their cars on October 7, went to the Nova Festival, the site where most young people were killed by Hamas terrorists, and they were just picking up people, trying to evacuate as many people as possible. I heard somebody that managed to do 17 of these rounds, back and forth, under fire, under rocket fire, imagine 17 times he went there, not knowing if he's gonna come back.
Right.
Only with the hope to be able to rescue one life. I want to live life like this.
Yes. Well, let me tell you, in Israel, a part of it also is, and Americans don't really understand this, until they get there and can really interact with it. But you're like one big family.
Yeah.
Israelis, your Jewish identity, you're part of a people group. It's like a big family. You're all related, you know, generally,
right,
at some level. And so every time you get together, you meet a new person, you just start talking about, oh, well, you know, your grandfather knew my grandfather, and you have this history and this lineage. And I think that's when your people pull together, because it's members of a family that's been hurt, and they may not know them at all, but it's family. So they're going to go down there and do that.
And I got to say, when October 7 happened, and I was deployed 2 days later on October 9, and I drove to where we were based in the Golan Heights. So I drove all the way from Tel Aviv up to the Golan Heights. It's quite a ride. And almost every junction, I saw a station for soldiers. I was surprised how fast they were able. And keep in mind, it's war. It was like the beginning of a really big, like, rocket attacks everywhere. And yet civilians took themselves to the junctions with hot coffee, tea, flags of Israel. It's like a booth with flags of Israel. And you knew that if you make a stop there, somebody's going to hug you and give you a cup of coffee.
Wow, that's a beautiful, beautiful story. And that's the real Israel. And that's the Israel we want to share with our audience and get the word out about. You are the real Israel in these stories. And so I want to ask one last question before we wrap up our time together. Tell us a little bit about your family background. You're Israeli, but you actually are a believer in Jesus. You're Christian,
yes,
or however you identify it as. How, tell us, that came from your parents? Is your parents believers?
Yeah. So in the world of identifying as this, as that, so I'm proud to be Jewish, and I believe in Jesus. And my parents, they immigrated from former Soviet Union. As soon as communism collapsed, they immigrated with the help of the Jewish Agency to Israel. They kind of almost like smuggled them via Budapest to Israel. And as soon as they landed, they were met with identification cards, everything. They welcomed them after a very humiliating stripping of their citizenship in Russia. And they came to Israel. They were not believers. They were actually secular Jews. They later started practicing Judaism in the city of Tzfat in the Upper Galilee. And they, long story short, they met somebody that was very happy. They were wondering where this joy is coming from. So now they're believers. I was born into this family, and I myself decided to follow in the footsteps of Christ when I was 14.
Oh.
And I'm proud of this. There is no need to be ashamed of what you believe in. If people have a problem with that, it is their problem, not mine. I didn't make it a problem.
That's wonderful. Well, we want to thank you for coming and visiting with our audience today and sharing your story. And we just pray the Lord blesses you and continues to use you as He already is, but grows your impact even more. And so thank you, Hananiah.
Amen. Thank you for having me. God bless you.
Yeah, great.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Out of Zion with Susan Michael. Be sure to subscribe to Out of Zion now on Apple Podcasts, cpnshows.com, YouTube, or wherever you like to listen and learn. Out of Zion with Susan Michael is a production of ICEJ USA, all rights reserved.